Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The Biden administration has slammed South Africa's genocide case against Israel as meritless. This begs the following question. Then what is happening in Gaza if not a genocide? Secretary of State Blinken says the civilian death toll in Gaza is far too high. Well, what should that number be? Crosstalking Palestine, I'm joined by my guest, Giorgio Caffiero, in Washington. He is CEO of Gulf State Analytics. In New York, we have Lionel. He is a legal and media analyst. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Lionel, let me go to you first here. I mean, you're a legal person. You have a legal background. And thank goodness you have a media one as well. You know, I'm not a lawyer. I look to people like you to help me out to understand the law. I know the procedures, how to approach the International Court of Justice, but I've seen hundreds and hundreds of hours of coverage inside of Gaza, okay? Not from Tel Aviv hotels, not from the suburbs of Washington, D.C. and New York, okay? I've seen hundreds of hours. If that's not a genocide, as Blinken claims, it's meritless, then what is that?
A couple of things here. First, the genocide that people may think in terms of, I don't want to say colloquialism, but when you think of the Holocaust or Rwanda, under the statute, we're talking about the Genocide Convention of 1948, it's a different standard. Let me get down to the brass tacks, the gravamen, if you will, the real issue, and what Israel in particular and their legal team should be looking at. One of the problems that's always seen is intent. Mm-hmm. And you're going to hear this a lot. Was there an intent? Just because there's horrors, just because there's death, sometimes war might be entered into for valid reasons, and there's collateral damage, et cetera, et cetera. But the question is, how do you establish intent? What they're going to show. And by the way, keep in mind, South Africa, the BRICS country, who, by the way, knows a little bit about apartheid and others. But what they're going to show is, by virtue of the statements made from generals, from media personalities, from representatives, the words from them themselves are going to indicate something that was far more dastardly, far more grievous, and something that is not, quote, collateral damage. That's going to be critical in this prosecution, in proving intent. Their words will indict them.
Well, Giorgio, if I can go to you in Washington, I've read the South African brief. I think they have like 15 pages of, as Lionel has pointed out to us, intent. Statements from politicians, from generals, even the president of Israel himself. It looks quite, there's a lot of intention the way I read it, not being a legal person, but at least in my estimation, they have made a case for intention. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I am not a lawyer or a legal expert, but I think when you look at the facts on the ground and you look at the consequences of Israel's actions in Gaza, and as my colleague mentioned, when you look at the statements from Israeli officials, you know, talking about a complete siege, it's rhetoric about human animals, talk about turning Gaza into another Auschwitz. This, in my opinion, makes the South African case a slam dunk one. I have a very difficult time understanding how people can look at what Israel has been doing in Gaza since October 7th and see it as anything other than a genocide. The reasons people deny it have to do with politics. But when you put the politics aside,
that's right,
and you look at the facts, I don't think there's a lot. That's my view.
Well, you know, but the Giorgio brings up a really good point, Lionel, because if you look at the judges on this tribunal, and it's by a nation state, and Giorgio has already pointed it out, it's going to get down to politics. What nation state supports this and doesn't? And if it comes to that, and it probably will come to that, then it delegitimizes the court itself. And then where do we go from there? Lionel.
up till now, Peter, look at how claims such as genocide have been handled in the past. Almost a, yeah. Something happened. I'm telling you, there's two events in my recent history. September the 11th, 2001, October the 7th of 2023. The world changed. Yeah. Everything changed. Everything, including the way this is handled, the way it's addressed. Because there's something which is so different. In the old days, if there was a skirmish or some type of activity with Hamas, the way the media covered it was, Israel would respond. People would say, well, they have a right to self-defense, and it would pretty much go away. This changed. This was not we're going to go after Hamas, but to the perhaps untrained eye, it looks like you're talking about eliminating not only a people, but a land, but an area. You know, Holocaust is one thing when you want to basically remove and vaporize a people. When you want to absent them, exit them, evict them, you can argue about, and this is, I can't believe we as humans are doing this. We don't want to kill all of them, the race of the Palestinians. We merely want them to leave. And now we're talking about splitting hairs, but under the definition of genocide and others as well, that may qualify as well. It comes down to the statutes, and it comes down to what's proved and intent, which I say again.
You know, Joshua, I think all of us are getting a bit tired of the good cop, bad cop routine that the Secretary of State is playing every time he visits the region. If he didn't achieve any success the first time, why has he gone back, what, for the fourth or fifth time? And just to save face, okay? Because this good cop, bad cop thing isn't going anywhere whatsoever. The whole world knows, and Israel particularly knows, is that the United States can turn off the spigot of arms and money in a nanosecond, and it won't. That's what's on trial here. Go ahead.
I agree that the statements from Blinken and others in the Biden administration about how they're very sorry for Palestinian deaths, I don't find any of it genuine. I don't think anyone in the region really finds it genuine. Obviously, the United States has the leverage to pressure Israel into immediately accepting a ceasefire. Because of political reasons, the U.S. is not doing that. I think one of the reasons that explains why Blinken is going back to the region so frequently and putting on this show, it's not only about U.S. domestic politics, but U.S. domestic politics is a factor. There is growing opposition among the American population to Washington's ironclad support for Israel's war on Gaza. And I think the Biden administration wants to be seen as being on record having told the Israeli leadership you need to take certain actions.
Yeah, but don't actions speak more than words? And that's what this is all about. Keep going, my friend. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, again, it's not genuine. And I don't think any serious person sees this as genuine on the part of Blinken or other figures. But it's part of an attempt to portray the Biden administration officials as the adults in the room who are trying to rein Israel in. We all know, though, that as long as the Biden administration gives Israel no ultimatums, no red lines, there's no conditioning of aid, then there's no reason to expect Israel to change its behavior. And we should also point out that even previous U.S. presidents who were very pro-Israel, Ronald Reagan, George W. Bush, they gave Israel red lines. Biden hasn't. I think this is the most pro-Israel U.S. administration we've ever had. And by that, I'm not saying doing things that are in the interests of Israel, because I would argue that what the U.S. is doing is not in the long-term interests of Israel. But what I mean is most aligned with the Israeli government of the day.
Well, also, I don't think, and Lionel, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I don't think any American president has openly said, I am a Zionist like Joe Biden has. I don't think the Biden administration understands the implications globally when a president comes out and speaks like that. Lionel, domestic politics have already been brought up. True or false, Biden has chosen his donors over his base.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, a couple of things here. You bring up a very good point. I hate to bring up the political aspect, but there's no way to miss it. You know, gentlemen, there are people, if I didn't know better, I would think that sometimes Netanyahu and Biden are living 40 years in the past. They don't know anything about social media. They don't know about platforms.
Yep.
They're living in a world. Imagine you and I are in a room right now, and we're watching the Lawrence Welk Orchestra. I'm dating myself. And I'm saying, wait a minute, I got up, and in the next room, there's Woodstock. This is the world, and we live in kind of a little Fox News, kind of a little, where people are saying the same idea. It's almost like there's a four-point thing. Israel has a right to defend itself. After all, it's about Hamas, their human shields, and that completely flies in the face of what? And I say, the world. The world. Up till now, if you had told me anything involving international criminal courts, we'd say, oh, please, that's some titular pro forma academic debating society. That changed. In New York, we are seeing demonstration after demonstration. And it also permeated into the Ivy League colleges, and that has been completely hijacked. No, I don't think they have any idea. And the question is Donald Trump going to maintain this? Is, I believe, Gavin Newsom, who's going to be handed the crown, is he going to maintain this? Goodbye, Democratic base. Because the rank and file, the actual liberal progressive group, wants to have nothing to do with this. It's like they're brain dead.
Before we go to the break here, Lionel, one of the interesting things that was pointed out to me, I think it was from Max Blumenthal in The Gray Zone, is that if you start paying attention to what is said in Hebrew in Israel, not what they say in English to the rest of the world, then you get a very good idea of what their intentionality is. And I think that, you know, with the even Netanyahu is being embarrassed by his own coalition partners because even after the South African brief, more and more statements could be added. So Hebrew versus English. Lionel, before we go to the break.
No, you're absolutely correct. Let me just say one thing. A couple of years ago, individuals like you mentioned, Max Blumenthal and others, people that were very, very popular and certainly had their fan base, are now enjoying not a fan base, but an authoritative version.
Yes, yes,
I cannot tell. I'm watching, me personally, people that a couple of years ago, I would have thought, well, I'm not the biggest fans. Now they're my go-to.
Yep.
And we're finding new coalitions.
And Norman Finkelstein has come back. Okay, all right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Palestine. Stay with RT.
In 1884, the German Empire began its colonial invasion into Namibia. From the very start, Berlin encouraged the white colonists to settle in Southwest Africa and take away the best land from the local tribes. The Germans were actively draining natural resources and using the local population as a cheap labor source. This was causing major protests and led to a rebellion. In 1904, the Herero and Nama tribes rebelled against German colonial rule. Kaiser Wilhelm II was fully determined and ordered to suppress the rebellion with the utmost severity. Against the inhabitants of Namibia, Germany threw its 15,000 well-equipped army. All around the country, concentration camps were built. Inhumane medical experiments over citizens were conducted. Within the period of 4 years, the Germans killed up to 60,000 people, among which there were 80% of the Herero tribe and 50% of the Nama tribe. The events in Southwest Africa are called the first genocide of the 20th century and, not without reason, are compared to the Holocaust. Just two decades later, after the massacre in Namibia, Hitler's assault unit put on the same brown colonial uniform which pushed the world into the chasm of the Second World War.
The
The circus is an amazing world full of laughter, fun, and excitement. And it's a whole lot more. Generations of circus artists keep the art alive, moving forward and preserving traditions at the same time.
This is one of the oldest circuses in Russia, the Moscow Circus on Svetnoy Boulevard. Some of the greatest acts in the business and some of the most breathtaking action happens right here.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Palestine. And now we're joined by Professor Mohammed Mirandi in Tehran. He's a professor at the University of Tehran. Welcome to the program, Professor. Professor, one of the things that we talked about in the first part of the program is the rhetoric coming out of Israel and out of the Biden administration here and about the genocide case against Israel. I want to broaden it out a little bit here. I mean, it's hard not to notice that the countries joining South Africa are all from the global south. So we have the West versus the global south again. And as our guest in Washington, D.C. pointed out, it's all going to get down to politics, nation states on this court here, and it's going to be the West against everybody else. They don't seem to understand how much they're alienating the rest of the world. And the way things are going, I don't think anyone's going to say rule-based order ever, ever again. Thank God. Go ahead, in Tehran.
Yes, it's a lose-lose situation for the West. From the very beginning, they were on board with the genocide. They tried to make this about October the 7th and to pretend that history began on October the 7th. But we live in a different world today. The global South, they have their own local media, and people in social media are talking about the history of Palestine, what's been going on in Gaza for the last 15 years, the constant airstrikes and mass killings that we've seen over the years in Gaza. So people see the world and they see Gaza different than before. They're getting their information from different sources. So the West is seen as implicated, as they've been supporting the Israeli regime. And Kirby again has said that the U.S. is opposed to a ceasefire. So the West is hitting it, and it's not just the United States. The Europeans, by remaining quiet or obedient, they're losing just like the Americans. And then on the other hand, if the Israelis are condemned, if the judges take a stance against the Israeli regime, then it's a loss for the Israelis. But if they don't, and if politics get in the way, as you alluded to, then the so-called international order takes another hit, and the whole UN, the whole UN Security Council, all of the institutions are weakened even further. And I think that pushes the world further towards regional institutions. It makes people look at BRICS more seriously, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization more seriously, and other organizations, because they see that the UN simply cannot be reformed.
Well, Giorgio, in Washington, we all have to point out it wasn't the UN that spearheaded this. I know that they'll say, no, you need one of the member states of the United Nations to do it. No, they have the infrastructure at the United Nations about the prevention of genocide. They were very quiet, remarkably or unremarkably, how you look at it. Giorgio, another thing that's really interesting to me, you know, Lionel has been very gracious to come on week after week to discuss this. We've discussed many times the awareness issue. It's just, I'm amazed by it. I'm amazed by how much more awareness, because I remember after October 7th, I know what's going to happen. We all know what's going to happen. It'll be brushed aside. I was very, very wrong, and I'm very glad to admit when I'm wrong, because the awareness around the world. Let's do a juxtaposition here. Where are all the protests? Where's the money for Ukraine? They don't exist. But where are the protests all across the Western world, even American Jews that I know personally, that don't usually go out and protest? They protest, okay? Not in my name and never again. And I think that's a real lesson for us all. That is really something that, as Professor Mirandi has already alluded to, the West is out of touch with the rest of the world and even with their own publics. Go ahead, in Washington.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. This narrative that what Israel has been doing in Gaza is all about defending Israel, or it's all about going after Hamas as opposed to the people of Gaza. This is a narrative that is really rejected throughout the global South. And as you rightly point out, even here in the United States, it's a huge segment of the population that also rejects that type of propaganda. I think what is clear is that there is a real divide between policymakers in the global North, and by that I mean obviously United States and Western Europe, and those of the global South. And it's not just the Arab and Islamic world. If you go to Africa, South America, you see a very strong opposition to what Israel is doing from very prominent leaders, such as the leader of Brazil, for example. It's the case that October 7th was a moment that did a lot to, I think, accelerate this bifurcation between the global North and the global South when it comes to some of these information battles. It's really remarkable how deep this divide is. It's almost like many leaders in Western Europe and North America are talking about a completely different conflict.
Yeah.
Than what leaders in the global South are talking about.
That's an amazing observation. I agree with you completely. If you look at the broadsheets, the New York Times, Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, they're not talking about the conflict that all of us are watching in real time. And that's what's so infuriating, is because, you know, we could go through the weapons of mass destruction. Oh, we made a mistake. You know, that was an oversight, you know. And then, you know, the Russiagate hoax, you know. No one's apologized for this. But they don't even apologize now for blatant lies. They think that all of you have been aware of the systematic rape on October 7th, which has been completely debunked, okay? Lionel, I mean, this is that division. It's not only between elites and publics here. It's what, you know, it's what's true and what's false. Go ahead, Lionel.
Scott Fitzgerald said that little lies are hard to keep under wraps, but big lies are easy because of our incredulity.
Yep.
You mentioned the rape. One thing I found out, which is very interesting, and there's got to be a name for this, like the Mandela effect or something, I don't know. But if I come up with a story that is so horrific involving, please forgive me, decapitation, rape, disembowelment, evisceration, burning children, babies, infants, incubators, name it. If I come up with something, and let's assume, arguendo, just for the sake of argument, that it's all false, and you were to refute that, the first thing I'm going to say is, how dare you?
You.
Yeah. Because of the level, the degree of, let's say, the lie. I don't know about you, but I have these certain people in my lives who have been perennially clueless. And I have heard more friends and people that I know, good people, say, I had no idea.
Yeah.
And what you're seeing is this blood-brain barrier between the New York Times and conventional legacy media and the rest of the world. There's a collision. Let me tell you something. When this is resolved, say goodbye to Washington Post, New York Times. I mean, they're already on their deathbed. But this is it. You're going to see a complete transmogrification of people in the news media and platforms you've never heard of. And everything has changed for the better, I hope.
Well, hopefully it gets better at some point. But that's not going to happen anytime soon. Professor Mirandi and Turan, from a kind of a looking at how this conflict backed by the United States is continuing, you know, we have this clueless clown named Blinken going around. I don't know what he's doing, seriously. I don't think anybody's taking him very seriously. But I think the United States is on board for an escalation of this. They say just the opposite. Whatever they say, it probably is the opposite. I think the right-wing government under Netanyahu sees this as an opportunity to solve a lot of problems in their mind. Gaza, Hamas, Hezbollah, Iran. I think these people are going to think big because all of it's going to crash down upon them otherwise. Go ahead. That's what I'm really worried about, this escalation.
I think that the reason why he's traveling is that he wants to buy time for the Israelis, and he wants the United States to be seen as trying to solve the problem. But when the United States is opposed to a ceasefire, the world is going to see things as it is, as we've been discussing already. And I just want to give you an example. Remember, we all remember that when they want the United States wanted to attack Iraq over Kuwait, we had the incubators.
Yep.
And when they spoke about the babies being thrown out of the incubators, they convinced a lot of people that they have to go to war. Now, this time
Professor Morandi, but the Israelis did force children, babies out of incubators in Gaza. That is documented. That is documented. Sorry to interrupt. Continue.
That is exactly what I was going get to, and that is that this time round, even though social media is censored, even though the algorithms are all rigged in the favor of the establishment in Israel, as soon as the Israelis actually do commit atrocities with babies in incubators, it comes out. Or when the New York Times, as was alluded to, makes outrageous claims about mass rape, two reporters, one you named, Max Blumenthal in particular, and Aaron Mate, when they go after the New York Times, they're able to discredit it. Despite all the
Gutterman? What's his name? What's the guy that wrote that article? Apparently, he's just disappeared off the face of the earth.
Yes, and now the Washington Post apparently wants to do a hit piece on these two young reporters, both Jewish and both heroic.
That's right.
But they preempted that hit piece by calling the reporter on the phone and humiliating her. The world has changed. So the United States, if the Israeli regime moves towards escalation, it's going to get worse. Not only will they be defeated on the battlefield, because Hezbollah is far stronger than Hamas. They're not surrounded. They have enormous potential. Ansarullah, or the Yemeni armed forces, they've been building up their underground networks that are far more advanced than what Hamas has in that small territory.
And yeah, but Professor Morandi, that's why they want to pull the United States in. They want the United States to do the heavy work. And the man called Joe Biden, the great Zionist in the White House, he might just do it. Last 20 seconds.
And that's why people should start opening their eyes that not only is the existence of Israel detrimental to Western interests, but the Israeli regime is actually willing to sacrifice the West for itself. It wants to get Americans killed. It wants to destroy Western economies for its own sake. They are not a part of the West. They're bringing down the West. They've destroyed the credibility of the West. People across the world are blaming the West for this genocide. And the Israelis, all they do is they carry out the atrocities and make the United States pay the price.
That's a prediction. I think you can go to the bank with. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Tehran, Washington, and in New York. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk Rules.